Are you scouring the web for the best Black Friday and Cyber Monday deals? Stop it. Get Rakuten. Rakuten is a shopping sidekick that gets you cash back on gifts for everyone on your list. Right now, you can get up to 15% cash back at the stores you love. You can even stack cash back on top of the biggest sales of the year. That's savings on savings. It's more time shopping and less time searching. With Rakuten, you're always saving at your favorite stores on the things you're already buying. Cash back is automatically added to your account as you shop, and you can get paid with gift cards, PayPal, or check. Or eligible American Express card members can even choose to earn membership rewards points instead of cash back. It's truly a no-brainer. Now's the time to join. Up to 15% cash back ends on 12/2. Plus, new members will receive a welcome bonus after minimum qualifying purchases. Just go to Rakuten.com, download the app, or install the browser extension. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Terms and conditions apply.
Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. Joining us on the line now is Justin M. Jacobs. He's a professor of history at American University and teaches courses on Chinese and Japanese history, the Silk Road and voyages of exploration. His latest book is Plunder, How Museums Got Their Treasures. It's a thought-provoking examination of the allegedly immoral provenance of Western museum collections. Welcome to the show, Justin.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you with us. So this is a really interesting subject, and I've always kind of wondered who decides how and why museums have the rights to certain artifacts. How does it all work then?
Well, what I'm trying to explore in my book is the various ways in which the antiquities and art that we see on displays in museums actually got there. And a lot of the current public discourse that surrounds museums today is sort of what our own views are for the past couple of decades, whether we think that museums have the right to these things or not, or if things should be returned. And as a historian, I thought it would be interesting to go back and ask a different question. And so what I try to explore is, what did the people who were involved in these interactions, the excavations, the transport of antiquities across borders, what did they think of what was going on at the time according to their own values in their own society and place? So I'm trying to take a historical perspective and say, yes, we have our views now, but what did people in history actually think about the removal of the Elgin marbles, the plunder of the old Summer Palace in Beijing in 1860, so that it's not so presentist, what we often see in our debates today.
Interesting. So what did you find out, and were you surprised in what you found out?
So what I found out is, studying this over a couple of decades, is that it seems to me that there are four chief methods by which art and antiquities have made their way from the non-Western world into the major Western museums. And so what I see is that there are diplomatic gifts, things that Western diplomats would often get in the course of their duties. There are plunder, military plunder, which is soldiers on campaign. There are things that are obtained through dealers who are essentially businessmen. And then there are things that are acquired by scholars, usually associated with universities or other learned bodies, and they will undertake things like excavations and expeditions. And what I essentially found, I was surprised to learn, I expected to go into my research many years ago, finding that the majority of people in the host countries or the source country where these antiquities came from resisted what they were doing, and that the application of force, coercion, must have been a big part of the equation, and that as these things left, that the people in the source country were thinking of the Westerners as thieves. And I did not find that. Trying to recover the voices of the people who actually were involved in these interactions, what I found is that really the only form of antiquity transfer from the non-Western world to Western museums that was considered immoral at the time that it took place, not simply retroactive from our perspective today, was the military plunder. And I openly concede that anything taken by military plunder has a pretty good case for restitution today. Things like the Benin bronzes, things from the old Summer Palace. But although that gets a lot of attention in public discourse, That was actually the exception. And I think there's actually very few things that are in Western museums, you know, as a percentage of the collection, that are the result of military plunder. The vast majority of what of the other things that you see are going to be diplomatic gifts. They're going to be obtained by dealers or by scholars. And what I found, much to my surprise, is that when it was obtained by those other three methods, not military plunder, most of the people in the host country enthusiastically participated in the excavation or the removal, and got a form of compensation that they thought was adequate at the time that this took place. And generally, the whole interaction was voluntary as well.
Isn't that fantastic? That's just really fascinating, because it means that it's all, it kind of reminds me of this wokeness that everyone's so offended at everything all the time. So people are offended about something that on behalf of people when it happened a long time ago who weren't offended at the time.
Right, right. And as a historian, I think it's very important to not get too wrapped up in the present and try to get a different perspective. And so key to my understanding of how these perspectives have changed, really the most important thing to understand, if you want to know why didn't they think this was theft back then, but we do today, is that our valuation of these antiquities has changed over time. When they were being removed, the people in the host country generally regarded them, depending on their economic class in life, their degree of education, they would regard them as perhaps worthless or something that was only to be used in fertilizer. If they were somewhat educated, they may have regarded it as precious, but no one in the host country regarded these things as priceless, as symbols of abstract nations that they supposedly represented. And if they did not regard it as priceless, then there was a form of compensation that they would be satisfied with in exchange for helping to remove this thing, as long as they regarded at the time period that they perceived the form of compensation that they were getting from the foreigner as greater than the value of what was being removed. And over time, we all start to see these things as priceless, including the descendants of the people in the host country. And that's why it's so hard for us to comprehend that they weren't regarded as thieves and actually had so much voluntary, enthusiastic assistance, is precisely because we all now regard the stuff as priceless. And so we think, how could a priceless thing ever leave its home country? It must have been by coercion, deceit, the application of imperialist force. And that's actually not it. It's simply changing views over time of the value of the object.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, there are still things that are found now in modern times, but from ancient times. I mean, have people's opinions of that sort of thing changed over the years?
You know, it really depends on your station in your society, what your economic class background is. When I said that views have changed so that everyone now regards something as priceless today, I'm actually referring simply to educated elites, people, you know, government officials, and urbanites who have an education and some means of wealth who might go to these museums. These are the people who have been conditioned through their education to be thinking of these things as priceless emblems of your nation. But even today, I would argue that something that we often don't think about is that most of the people in these source countries, oftentimes these are poor countries, and the antiquities that you hear about, you know, illicit transport of things and dealers and whatnot today, they often come from unstable, politically unstable, very impoverished regions of these countries. And if you adopt the perspective of the people who are living in these remote areas, oftentimes they are not educated to believe that these represent the priceless emblems of their nation. They are trying to think about how they're going to put food on the table for the next day. And to them, these antiquities don't symbolize the things that they symbolize to us. They don't symbolize the ancient glory of the Khmer Empire, you know, if you're thinking about maybe poor rural Cambodians. They symbolize an economic resource. And that's why the illicit trade can continue today, because in the eyes of most of the poor people who live in these areas, it's not illicit. It's a means of making money. And they are not been educated and conditioned to think of them as priceless emblems of the nation that would constitute a betrayal of that nation if you were to facilitate its removal.
Yeah. And is there not kind of some sort of obligation if you were to find something through like a metal detector or whatever, find something that you think museums would be interested in for various reasons? Is there not some kind of obligation that you have to report it? Do you have to take it to a museum?
Yes, in general today, again, if we're going to talk about changing values over time, one of the other major values that has changed to our own age is now we regard nations, states as owning all the soil within their boundaries. And anything that is unearthed from that soil is, if it's not sort of within someone's private property, you know, their private ranch, their private backyard, oftentimes it is seen as belonging to the state before it even emerges from the ground. And so this is often the case with antiquities today, is that they are already assumed that this represents your nation and it's owned by the state if it's not found on private property. That wasn't the case, you know, 100, 200 years ago, that, it, you know, this sort of idea that things that come out of the ground are already owned by the state and already symbolize the nation. So certainly today, most people have been raised to subscribe to that point of view, that this is something that, yes, you absolutely have an obligation to contribute this to an institution that displays and represents the nation that this object supposedly represents.
Fascinating. So doing all this research and finding out about how things have changed over the years, has your opinion on the way it's all handled changed?
It does. I think a lot of us now have been led to believe from public discourse over the past couple decades that when you walk into a major Western museum, you're essentially entering a crime scene. I don't view it that way. I think that you need to have nuance in understanding how things got to a museum. It's complicated. There is not one single path by which the things that you see on white pedestals or hanging from a white wall got there. There are, in my research, there are four distinct paths, the various paths that I was talking about, and each one has different moral considerations, different historical contexts that need to be taken into consideration to properly evaluate whether or not we should regard this as an immoral act today. And so for me, as a historian, of course, I put a great deal of weight on what people thought at the time period. And when I see people of all walks of life in China or Egypt, from the poorest peasant all the way up to the emperor, enthusiastically cooperating and feeling actually like they got the better deal in this interaction, I have a really hard time regarding that as a form of theft or an immoral act, no matter how much our views have changed. This isn't like slavery, where it was, you know, trafficking in human bodies. These are inanimate objects that were willingly gifted, traded away. The only form that I would see as morally tainted back then and today are things that were acquired through military plunder. And those were criticized back in the day as well. If you look at the historical sources, they're unique in being the only form of antiquity transfer where people back home in London, in New York, they were criticizing that as well. Our soldiers shouldn't be doing this. This is barbaric behavior. If you can identify things that are the result of military plunder, I think you have a good case for restitution. As for the rest of it, I have a hard time signing on to that view.
Yeah. And I mean, you see people of all backgrounds and walks of life enjoying museums. It's not just the elite who would go into a museum and view these artifacts. You know, you'd have people coming over from different countries. You know, if there was a, well, let's use it from my point of view. If I traveled to America and there was an exhibition on a British history or English history, I'd be fascinated to go. I wouldn't go with the attitude of why have they got all these artifacts from England? You know, I'd find it interesting. Right, right. And that obviously happens all around the world. People coming from Africa or from Central America or whatever to Europe or to America and going to museums and finding out about their background and their history.
And that was how things operated back in the day as well, is that it was not seen as odd for people to obtain things, purchase things, excavate things, and then take them abroad. In fact, I would say to definitely to the educated elites in the host country, it was actually seen as a form of flattery. It was a form of flattery for the most part that Westerners were so interested in China's history to the point where they would expend all these resources and time and energy on uncovering some ancient bronzes.
Yeah, it's an interesting
promoting China's reputation to the world.
Yeah, exactly.
In the West.
Well, if people want to find out more about this subject, they should definitely get a copy of your book. It's called Plunder: How Museums Got Their Treasures, and it's by Justin M. Jacobs, who we've been chatting with today. The book is available on our website in the bookshop section on TRE.radio. Justin, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.